How should we as believers treat our money? Should we be investing in retirement, life insurance? What about medical costs? How biblically do we look at our money on this slice of fresh bread? Welcome to Fresh Bread, a podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church, Gainesville, with Pastor Brandon and Pastor Keith. Well, thanks for clicking on Fresh Bread. Fresh Bread. We're bringing the truth of God's word to a starving world. Fresh Bread Podcast 94. And today we're going to look at money and what do we do with our money? I don't have a lot of money, but what should I do? So we're going to look at money, investing, retirement, life insurance, and medical costs. All these things are, how do we look at them biblically? And so I'm Pastor Keith. He's Pastor Brandon. Pastor Brandon, you have more money than I do. You do more investing than I do. I don't invest a lot, but if I did, I'd probably invest in like McDonald's or something. But how biblically should we look at our money and invest it? And this is a question that someone asked us. And I think it's an important one because you just did a sermon on where our treasure is, right? And so that's what we're asking you today. What about how do we look biblically at our money and investing?
Well, I think we have to recognize that this is a heart question, first and foremost. I mean, you mentioned not having a lot of money and, you know, and maybe others having more. But I think that we have to recognize that even if someone doesn't have a lot of money, they can have a struggle with money. As a matter of fact, sometimes people have a struggle with money. People who don't have money have more of a struggle than people who do. And it causes, when you don't have a lot of money, it causes you to be a guy that's or a person, you know, person that really doesn't want to spend their money, and you're really tight with it, and you don't want to give it away. You know, because you don't have a lot, and that's really anti-biblical. It goes against biblical teaching, and you know, the heart. We have to recognize that God wants us to be conduits, and when we're conduits, that's really the point of the blessing. You know, some health and wealth teachers would say that you need to give to them, and you know, giving to them or giving to the Lord, you know, to make it more sound more holy, is, you know, God is going to bless you beyond your imagination. And you know, that's the wrong attitude. Like, I'm giving in order to be blessed. But I think that when we recognize that as conduits for what God is doing, you know, when I say a conduit, what I mean is that, you know, when God gives me money, I use it for his kingdom. It's a conduit through me to his kingdom. We have to be able to, we have to, you know, pay our bills. We have to support our families. And so that, and that's not wrong. And it's not wrong to pay your bills and support your family and do all that. But, you know, God really should come first in that. And what I mean is that we should be willing to give to him and to his kingdom before we give to, you know, before we take care of ourselves. And I know that's hard with someone who doesn't make a lot of money. You know, it's hard because, you know, that they, you end up, you know, you feel like you're giving your last dime, you know, that I can't make my bills if I don't do this. But it's short-sighted when you get into that position, because in reality, God is going to bless you as you become a giver. He's going to bless you and make you a conduit through which he uses to bless others. And I, you know, when that conduit's blocked, you know, by our pride and worry and anxiety, what happens is that God uses other means, and we end up not, you know, getting the blessing. And really, it's not just the blessing of more money. It's not that. It's the blessing of seeing God's money, God's, you know, the means that God has given us, seeing it being used for his kingdom, and, you know, seeing people benefit, you know, from that. Yeah, I'm certainly not saying that I have the, you know, my wife and I, we get it perfectly, and we give, you know, like we should, and we, you know, but to the extent that we have given, to that extent, I think the Lord has blessed us. And, you know, we've actually seen throughout our marriage, we've actually seen God bless us more and more in how he's blessed us with money. And I really do think that's a testament of that. We don't see money as something that we can, gain more possessions out of. And again, we're not perfect. I have wasted more money than I care to even talk about, than, you know, wasted on stuff that I shouldn't have done. And yet, I think the Lord has honored, you know, where we've tried to help and given to his, you know, to the preaching of the gospel.
What you're saying is when we get our money, we get paid, we're supposed to give to the Lord first, or do we pay our bills first and then whatever's left we give to the Lord?
Well, I think the better biblical model is that we give to the Lord, because I think the other way around is you're giving out of your abundance. If I have money left over after I pay all the bills, then that's really giving out of your abundance, like giving out of your excess. And I don't think that is the biblical way to do it. I think the biblical way to do it is that you commit to the Lord and I'm going to give so much, and you trust that he's going to make up the difference if there is a difference. And I'm not saying that we should be frivolous or unwise. And, you know, if you make, you know, $5,000 a month and you give $2,500 a month away, you need to make sure that you still can pay your rent and you still can buy your food and you still can, you know, you still need to do that. And so there is a balance there. I mean, there's a tension there, but, you know, but at the same time, we should give sacrificially. And so, you know, if you make $5,000 a month, you know, what is a sacrificial number? Well, that's different for everybody. I would argue that's why the New Testament doesn't give us a, you know, percentage that we need to give, that ultimately it's giving as unto the Lord, giving out from the heart, and, you know, setting an amount and saying, okay, this is what we're going to do and this is how we're going to live. And, you know, we're not going to live beyond this. And so we're going to give him this much, and he's going to, you know, ultimately make up the difference if there needs to be one. And yeah, that's how Angie and I have tried to do it. You know, we never perfect, but that's how we've tried to handle it.
Yeah. So do we give 10% off the top? Is that what we have
to
do?
No, that's not. Okay. No, not necessarily. That's what I just said, is that the New Testament doesn't give us, you know, a 10% tithe. That's what, you know, a lot of people, you know, do, and what they think is it needs to be 10%. And yet that's not what the New Testament says. The New Testament has more of a, you know, give like as a matter of, you know, as a matter of what you do, but you're not, I mean, you're giving as like according to your heart. Like what is it that I need to give sacrificially, ultimately, is what it boils down to. You know, giving, you know, that the whole idea of making sure that I'm giving with liberality and not trying to hoard my, you know, what I have, not trying to build up a big bank account in order to do whatever or to have comfort or have security. The Lord, you know, frowns upon that.
Is it give till you hurt?
Well, I think so. I mean, I do. I you know, everybody's situation is different, and I don't want to, you know, make somebody feel bad about not giving enough. I mean, if the Lord's convicting your heart, that's fine. I don't want to convict you that way. I mean, I'm not trying to make people feel like that they're not, you know, worthy and that sort of thing. But the Lord, if the Lord convicts your heart that way, but yeah, I mean, I do think that that's more the principle, is that I should give till I hurt, and, you know, that trusting that the Lord is going to care for me. And
how does that fit in with a joyful giver, though, if it hurts? Like, shouldn't you?
Well, because you are joyful, even though it hurts. Yeah. I mean, that's considered all joy when you encounter various trials. So I can have joy even if I have, you know, difficulty.
Okay.
I mean, it's just learning. I mean, Paul says in Philippians 4, you know, learning to live with plenty, but also learning to live with, you know, not so much. And so, you know, that's the kind of the attitude, but that learning to live in that way ultimately has to do with my heart, and, you know, which my heart that's going to have joy. You know, Paul says, Philippians 4:10, he says, but I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at last you have revived thinking about me. Indeed, you were thinking about me before, but you lacked opportunity. Then he says this, not that I speak from want, for I learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in abundance. And in any and all things, I have learned the secret of being filled and growing hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. And then he says, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. So, you know, there's going to be times in your life that he does give you abundance, and, you know, and it's being faithful in those times, but there's going to be times when there's need, and it's being faithful during those times as well.
Yeah. Why do you think it is so hard? Is it because of the way we grow up here in America, but to trust God with our money? Like, we work hard for it. This is our money. And yeah, I'm going to give a little bit to the Lord, but I also am going to, you know, we need this, we need that. I'm going to store some up in the bank. It is totally a trust thing, really, for us to let go of our money. And I like how you said at one time that we hold our money with open hands. We don't.
Well, we hold everything, life,
clench our
face. You know, any resource that we have, whether it's our life or time, our financial resources, it is an open hand, and understanding that God is the one who deals with those things. He's the one who chooses to use you in whatever way he deems necessary, and whatever way brings him glory. And so, you know, that's the idea. The idea is that there are going to be times where we have abundance. There are going to be times where we're being filled. There are going to be times when we have lack and we go hungry. And so, you know, that we suffer need, and, you know, that's okay. I mean, but finding joy in all of that, and not thinking in terms of, I have to have a certain amount of money in the bank in order to make this work. I need to have a certain amount of, you know, retirement in order to be ready to retire. You know, those kind of things are just really shifting your mind, because yes, as Americans, it's been hammered into us, and it happens every day. We get hammered with, you know, where are you at financially? Do you have a savings? Do you have, you know, do you have a nice house? Do you have a good car? Do you have all these things? And you know, a big 401k or pension, you know, are you set up that way? And we're so programmed that way that I don't think we realize that we're, you know, forgetting the main thing. And the main thing is, are we being pleasing to the Lord with our possessions?
So what do we say to people who, let's say they give to their church, but they're not real sure how the church is going to handle the money? So I'm not going to give them a lot. I'm just going to give them a little bit. Is it people not trusting the Lord in that way? Because you should just give and not, should you worry about where the money goes? Or is it just, this is the Lord?
Yeah. Okay. So that's a nuanced answer, really, because there are people who are unfaithful. There are people who are in Christian leadership who are unfaithful with money, and we need to make sure that we recognize those people and not give to those people. You know, I mean, as an example, Joel Osteen is not someone a Christian should be giving to. Mm. So, you know, that we need to recognize that, you know, that he's just one example. But, you know, I would say that a church that is being faithful in their teaching, you know, you can generally trust they're going to be faithful in finances, because there is a connection between the two. When somebody's trying to do things that are sort of secret friendly, or, you know, want to make sure they don't ever offend anybody, or they twist God's words, and, you know, for whatever reasons that they have, that usually that there's money involved in that. There's usually it's for gain. And so, you know, there's a connection there. So don't give to those people. Don't give that way. Now, in terms of a faithful local church, I think if you've chosen a faithful local church or a Christian organization as well that you see as faithful, I'm thinking of, you know, like Grace to You, but you see them as faithful, I would say give and you know, give with liberality and just forget about it. Like, it's not, you know, it's not something that you should ever remember again, you know, that you've given this money. Angie and I, we've given money, and, you know, you can't worry about whether or not they're being faithful with it. If the Lord wants to reveal that they're not being faithful with it, he'll reveal that. And so, you know, I think you just have to trust that if he wants to reveal that, he will. And ultimately, we just need to trust him, because we're giving to the local church, but ultimately we're giving to the Lord, and he's going to be the one who holds them accountable for what they do. All we can do is do our due diligence and try to make sure that it's the right, you know, giving to the right people.
I mean, if you're going to a church where your pastor's making $600,000 a year, I mean, that might be someone that if he's wearing these, you know, $2,000 suits and $2,000 sneakers, I would question that, but that's a whole nother podcast to talk about how much a pastor should make. But yeah, I mean, if a church is faithful to the Lord and you're giving out of the goodness of your heart, whatever you're giving till it hurts. But that, I think, yeah, you trust the Lord in that the church is going to take care of the money, and you sort of have to let it go and not worry about it, like you just said.
You know, and I think that I will say you have to be careful not to think that, oh, I give, you know, $1,000 a month, and so I have this, you know, impact on what decisions are made and how mm-hmm. the decisions are made. No, that doesn't, I mean, if you're not in spiritual leadership, you don't have impact yeah. that way. Now, I mean, I that's not to say, or you don't have the ability to make decisions that way, and you shouldn't try to get out of your lane and get into that. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, the Lord may choose you as an elder, and then you have more influence that way, you know, to influence it. But even that has to be, you have to be careful, because, you know, I've seen a situation where a man, you know, was a big giver, and I think there was an expectation that he have influence because of that giving in terms of how we spend the money. And, you know, you have to be careful with that even as an elder. If you are an elder that happens to be able to give a lot, you can't give with strings attached.
Yeah, you can't. In fact, it's kind of dangerous sometimes to put wealthy people on the elder board if they're, you know, not walking solidly with the Lord. Because that can,
there is a danger there. There is a danger there. Now, but there's just as big a danger to put somebody that's poor on the elder board that, you know, that has, you know, has a love of money in their heart. And so, you know, the issue is not just making sure they're not a lover of money.
Yeah.
To the best of, you know, obviously to the best of your ability.
It's either Joel Osteen or Judas. I mean, yeah, you don't know who you're going to get. Judas was more of a miser. We can't spend it on this. We got to save it for this. But he was actually skimming off the top. But okay, well, let's jump into the investment part. So if we're giving to the church until it, you know, out of the goodness of our heart, we're giving as much as we can. So where do we get the money to invest? Or how do we do that? Can you explain that? I know you... you're more of an investing guy. And like I said, I don't. I just sort of, you know, go to McDonald's and that's what I do. But and if I had money, I don't know, what would I invest in? What do we do? Explain this to me.
Well, I think, okay. So, you know, there are obviously, you know, it's funny because even in our own family, my wife is more of a spender. I'm more of a saver. And part of that saving for me comes into investing and, you know, being willing to, or being able to invest in certain things in order to see that money grow. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having, you know, savings. There's nothing wrong with having an investment account. There's nothing wrong with having a 401k. We can get more into retirement in a moment, but there's nothing wrong with those, you know, those concepts. Again, it's a matter of the heart and why you're doing it. And so if you're doing it in order to have comfort, if you're doing it in order to reduce anxiety, you know, that I don't want to run out of money, I don't want to be poor, you know, those are, you know, sinful motivations. But if you're doing it such that, you know, the Lord is going to, is that you're going to be freed up to serve him more, you know, both with your money and both and with your time, that's not a bad thing. You know, so as an example, if someone is going to retire, you know, and I don't have a problem with leaving your job, you know, at some point when you get to a certain age or a certain situation, but you shouldn't be thinking in terms of, oh, I'm just going to sit back and do nothing now. You should be thinking in terms of, wow, this opens me up to ministry. This mm-hmm. opens me up to help others, to, you know, be a guy that can go, even if you're not a pastor, like, but if you have skills, you know, like you have a carpentry skill or a plumber or an electrician or, you know, computer programming or anything like that, you can help others with that, you know, with those things. And it, so it opens up having the ability to have a retirement that, you know, to be basically independent in retirement gives you the ability to use that time in other ways to serve the Lord. But if you're just doing it, you know, the whole, you know, collecting seashells is the John Piper example. And, you know, if you're just doing it to finance collecting seashells, then it's certainly not, you know, what we should be doing. Now, I do recognize that, again, it's a matter of the heart. You know, there is a, you know, obviously you could deceive yourself into thinking, well, I'm setting up this big 401k or this big investment account. I'm setting all that up so that I can now free myself up. So I'm going to work really, really hard and be really, really focused on my job and focused on making money And in one day, I'm going to get to this point where, okay, now I'm going to use it for the Lord. And I think that's something that's not right. That, you know, it's a matter of living that lifestyle. But in the midst of that lifestyle, as the Lord prospers you, there's nothing wrong with, and there's everything right about being able to use your money and, you know, wisely and investing it.
So as we look at retirement, you're saving money for that. Is that, how biblical is that? Because aren't we supposed to trust the Lord that he'll take care of us in our retirement? Or is it, like you were just saying, is it more wise to have like a nice, really big, nice nest egg so we don't have to worry?
Well.
Or is it somewhere in the middle?
It's probably somewhere in the middle, I guess. I would... Yeah, I don't think that we should be focused on having this big 401k. You know, it's interesting because the Lord actually led me to use my retirement account several years ago to leave my work and go to seminary. And he, through that retirement account and what we had in it, he sustained us for almost 4 years in California. You know, there was supplemental income as we went along, but he sustained us, and then I was even able to put a down payment on a home here in Florida when we got here. And so, yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with saving up that way. I'll tell you, for us, and, you know, this is, I humbly say this, I hope it's humble, but, you know, there was a time in Angie and I's life, I kept getting raises and bonuses, and, you know, the Lord was just prospering us that way. And we just came together and said, you know what, we're making enough. Like, we don't need any more. And so whatever the Lord prospers us beyond this, we're just going to give that. I mean, we're just going to figure out ways to give it. And we did. And I'm not saying we did perfectly, that we, you know, set that number, but we did. We didn't live in as big a house, a nice of house that we could have based on my income. We didn't have the cars that we could have driven based on my income. We tried to stay reasonable in those areas, and we gave, you know, we gave hopefully with liberality. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's just a matter of living, you know, your lifestyle in such a way and understanding that it's not wrong to save, even save for retirement as a good steward, but that, you know, because you don't want to presume upon anyone either. I mean, I say that, but I want to presume upon my kids. But that's a side story. But I'm kind of tongue in cheek on that. But I don't think it's bad for your children to take care of you in terms of, you know, you've taken care of them. There's, you know, as a family, there's nothing wrong with your kids taking care of you in retirement. But at the same time, you don't want to just like put all the burden on them. You know, you don't want to be a bad steward for your whole entire life. And you come to retirement age and all of a sudden you're freeloading on your kids. You know, I think the same principle is at play here. I have to work and I have to do what needs to be done to care for myself and for people around me. And so when that time comes, hopefully my kids are, you know, have that same focus that they want to care for the people around them. And, you know, where I fall short, they'll help. And at the same time, I don't need to have this focus of, well, you know, I'm just going to just freeload and soak off of somebody else in the future. So,
yeah, that was my goal, is to freeload. It didn't work out so well. But so as we look at investment, we're talking about investing. You're talking about it's okay to invest in retirement. It's okay to have that. So is that why some people really tend to look at jobs that have a pension? They're really looking for, you know, once they retire, they're still getting almost a full, I guess some pensions are pretty 70%.
Yeah, pretty robust.
Yeah. Would that be a good career to jump into, is something with a pension?
Yeah, I don't see a problem with that. I mean, it's not sinful to do that. You know, I've been talking to, you know, my son about getting a job, and I've encouraged him toward, you know, state jobs as a possibility because of the, you know, the potential for pensions, you know, if you stay long enough and the benefits that they give in terms of retirement and medical and all that. So, yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's a matter of the heart. Here's the thing. If you're taking away from the Lord in order to save up this big nest egg, you probably are out of balance. Uh-huh. But if you're giving to the Lord liberally and you're able to save some toward retirement, then the Lord is going to bless that. I mean, I like I say, I'm not anywhere near where I would want to be if I were just looking at trying to put myself in a position to be able to retire at, 65 or whatever. I'm not anywhere near where I need to be. But I'm okay with that because, the Lord, I used that money that I had that we had saved back, and I used that for seminary, and I'm just trusting that the Lord is going to prosper me to the level he wants to prosper me. And, I'm not trying to take away from the Lord in order to make up for that. Like I'm not going to give anymore because I don't have enough in my 401k or whatever, my retirement account. I mean, again, it comes back to the heart.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't give you like this guideline other than, some principles. And the principles are that, you should give to the Lord, and you should give, liberally. You should pay your bills and, not have a ton of debt. And, if you use debt, that you use it wisely. And, I think that those are the ways that, and then you should take care of people around you. And, your family and your wife, your kids, take care of, the poor around you, the people who have need. I mean, obviously dealing with that wisely. I mean, you're not just giving your money away for no reason. I promise you, I could give a lot of my money away to people who would waste it. And I don't want to do that. So.
Yeah, that's why you don't give it to me. So what about investing in things like real estate or stock? What do you think of as a Christian to do that? Is that something that's okay? Or
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I there's nothing wrong with using your money and investing that way. Buying real estate, if that's something that you're good at and can, how to make a profit that way, or investing in the stock market and there's nothing wrong with doing those things and making a profit from them. The problem would be being so devoted to those things that you lose focus on why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. You instead of doing it to honor the Lord with the money that he has given you, the increase that he's given you, you're just doing it in order to have a big stock account, or you're doing it in order to have, whatever thing that you can look to and say, this is all mine. Again, it really all comes back to the heart.
Yeah. It's like what you said in your sermon, that you got to be careful because money is very enticing and you can get really caught up in, like, you start making more and it becomes exciting. It becomes an addiction. And all of a sudden, before you know it, your heart is over there instead of over here. But also I think you need to be careful that sometimes you can say, look, here's what I'm going to do. I'm making all this money. I'm going to invest in this stuff. And then when this stuff starts paying off, then I'm going to give it to the Lord. Then I'm going to give it to my church. How about a believer investing in the lottery?
I don't like the lottery. I think the lottery is a scam. It's a scam, unfortunately, that takes money away from poor people because they don't know any better than, the state does it because they make money off of it. It's a form of tax.
Yeah.
And it's a tax on the poor for the most part, because it's poor people who tend to do it. And it's unfortunate, but it's true. And so I'm not a fan of these sports books, where you're betting on sports and that, you could probably argue, like with the lottery, you're betting on, the balls popping up and, which balls are going to pop up, and, they're going to pop up in the, with the numbers and the order that you're putting it in. And,
yeah.
That's just almost pure chance in that sense. You could argue with sports that you could do the research and that I know how to bet and that sort of thing. But I would say that that's even dangerous, that even cards, and some of it is as much the people that kind of go with it. Like, gambling always draws in, based people and, yeah. People who have, that are not the best, and you don't want to associate with those people. It can be dangerous even, if you're associating with those people. And so as Christians, we don't want to associate with those type of people in the sense of joining them. Obviously, associating with them in the sense of preaching the gospel is different, but we're talking about, you know, being involved in those situations, because there's a lot of crime that goes with that, you know, with that world. You know, now investing is different. I mean, I'm talking about investing in, you know, land or house, or it's different because you understand, you know, you actually have an asset, like you're buying an asset, and, you know, obviously you're hoping the asset's going to get more valuable. But there is a skill involved in that. There's a, you know, you consider a piece of property and you buy it. And we see that in scripture. We see script, you know, it's not, God doesn't give a prohibition against purchasing, you know, a home or purchasing a car or purchasing, you know, there's no prohibition that way. There's no prohibition against purchasing stock and, you know, in a company and trying to, you know, to, so that you can make money off of it. Now, you know, if your conscience tells you shouldn't do these things, you know, that it's a problem, that it is gambling, I'm not going to argue with you in the sense of what your conscience is saying. I don't see it that way. I don't think it's biblical that way, but I can understand why somebody would think that.
Is that why churches don't do the lottery like we don't? It's just
I don't think a church should get involved in the lottery. No.
How about a church getting involved in like real estate or something? If a church bought land,
In a sense, you are getting involved in real estate if you buy a piece of property and put a building on it, or buy a building with and own a piece of property. I mean, in a sense, you are, but I don't think beyond that, a church should do that. I don't think that's the purpose of a church.
Yeah, and the whole purpose of the money is trusting the Lord.
Yes,
I think that's what people are looking at. The lottery is one of these things where it's just you're paying a small amount of money to get a lot of money, or less of what you think you're doing, and it's a quick way to get rich. Like, people are always looking for a quick way to get rich, to make the most money they can with the least amount of time, rather than just saying, okay, Lord, I'm going to be faithful and do this and this, and then whatever you bless me with. But,
you know, it's interesting. If you do a study of those who have won the lottery, if you realize how much it hurt that it actually destroyed their lives, you probably wouldn't want to purchase many lottery tickets.
Yeah.
Because most people who win the lottery end up worse off than they began.
Yeah.
And much worse off, you know, whether it's drugs or whether it's, you know, being alienated from family because family wants the money that you have. I mean, there's just so many things that can happen, you know, that end up being problematic with winning a large amount of wealth, especially when you're not accustomed to it. Like, you're not accustomed to that life and you all of a sudden have all this wealth. It's very difficult and can be destructive, and it is destructive in most situations.
Yeah, you can totally see that, how that would happen. So we're talking about money. We're talking about investing now. We're talking about how you invest in your retirement, invest, you know, have a savings account. There's nothing wrong with that. How about something like life insurance? What should a believer be doing about life insurance? Is it a wise thing to have? Is it, you want a lot? Do you want just enough? What do we do?
Well, I think it depends on the situation. You know, when I was younger, you know, if we chose for Angie to stay home and not work and to raise the kids. And so if something would have happened to me during that time frame, and I, you know, it would have been wrong for me to not leave her in a position where she could get through that time. And so, you know, without having to do something drastic. And so a life insurance policy in that situation could definitely help bridge that gap. I don't think that there needs to be, I don't think that, you know, you need to have some massive policy that's going to set her for life in the sense of, like, never have to worry again. But I do think that it's good and wise to have something to help offset in that situation. You know, I think that it's wise to have some life insurance if you can, just to keep your family from having to deal with how much it costs to do a burial and all those things that go with it, you know, caskets and stuff like that. I mean, I know some people would go cremation. We've actually had a podcast on that, but you know, I would say a traditional funeral is probably the more Christian way to do it. Would be my preferred way. But they're expensive, and so I would say at least have some insurance, you know, life insurance to cover some of that, or cover that, and then have, you know, life insurance, you know, potentially if there's bills that need to be paid, you know, enough life insurance to pay off a house, you know, so that your wife doesn't have isn't saddled with that. So yeah, I think there's definitely good reasons to have life insurance, and I think it's a wise thing to do. But I think, again, if you're doing it like, you know, I want a $10 million policy. I don't know if you know if you can do that, but used to the gold standard was $1 million policy, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what the gold standard is now with with inflation, but I don't think we need to do anything like that. You know, I just want to make sure if something happens to me, my wife is comfortable. And you know, at this point, you know, the kids are out of the house for the most part. I mean, we still have two at home right now, but they're over 18 and ultimately independent. And you know, and so if something were to happen to me at this point, you know, she has her job and I think she'd be fine. You know, and I can't have life insurance because of my health. They won't write me a policy, and haven't for several, been able to do that for about a decade now. But I think that, you know, where she's at right now, I think she would be fine. It would be difficult, but I think she would be fine.
Would it be something to do, like have not only you, but Angie, and then when they were younger, should kids have life insurance policies?
Well, we actually have a life insurance policy on the kids that we can. I don't know if we can do it all of them because I think it depends on their age, but I think we can only do it if they're dependents. But I think that may be up to 25. I don't know, but we have historically had a small policy on all our kids so that if something happens, we have the ability to do a burial, and we don't have that strain of having to pay for that out of pocket. So that's what we've done. And generally it's pretty inexpensive for a kid, you know, 'cause kids don't tend to, kids tend to live a little longer. I mean, so.
Yeah. Does it depend on your age? Like if you're a young family in your 20s or 30s to have maybe a higher number on your life insurance policy, and then when you get older, maybe not quite as much? Or because I'm thinking when you were mentioning the gold standard, I'm thinking maybe 500 to 250,000, somewhere in that range would be a good number to leave someone behind. That would take care of a lot of debt, a lot of things.
Yes.
But
yeah. I don't know what the number is, but you know, in terms of kids, yeah, I mean, enough to cover a burial. In terms of a, you know, 20 somethings who are, you know, starting a family, especially if your wife is staying at home, having enough insurance. And when you're young, life insurance is cheap, in term life anyway. And so you can afford to have a bigger policy when you're young. Now, obviously you're not making as much money when you're young. So it's, you know, that's the other side of it, but have as big a policy as you can, because that person, you know, potentially is going to have to live for a while without you. Although, you know, I always told my wife, look, you just need to get remarried. If something happens to me, you know, you need to get remarried. And so I don't know where I stand with that at the moment with her, but you know, in terms of what she would do and what I would think she should do, but definitely, I definitely want to leave her in a position where she's not forced to do something. Like, she's not forced to marry a guy because he has money, you know, that can take care of her.
Yeah.
You know, she can marry that person if that's, you know, what the Lord leads her to do, but it's not out of desperation.
So that's life insurance. It's okay for Christians to have a decent life insurance to cover funerals and debt and things like that when they go.
Sure.
It's responsible to actually take care of your family in that way.
Yes.
Okay, so let's go into a little bit of medical costs. Should we, I guess when you're younger, maybe kind of save a little bit here and there, because as you grow older, and I know you and I've had this discussion about health and being healthy, but we don't always eat healthy when we're young. We don't always take care of ourselves. And when we get older, there's going to be more medical costs. So what do we do about that? Should we put some money away maybe for a medical cost, for medication, if we need to go on it? Hopefully we will never have to, but...
And well, most people do. Most people end up getting in a position where they have to have more medical as they get older.
Yeah.
I know that's been my case. I'm sure that's been your case, but it's just the way it is. You know, it's interesting because most companies anymore, if you're working for a company, offer a health savings account. That's actually a good vehicle for investment. And you know, what you can do is you can maximize what you can put in there, you know, the amount you can put in there, and then pay for your medical, you know, the copays and all that. Try to pay for that out of your, and medications, try to pay for that as much as you can out of pocket. And most HSA companies will let you invest the money into mutual funds within that account. And so it's actually another way of getting money. And you can actually, funny enough, I'm getting into the weeds here, but you can actually spend, if you spend money on medical, you can claim it later on your HSA. And so like if I spend money in 2025 on medical, but I don't spend it out of the HSA, I can actually save that receipt and apply it, you know, in 20 years. So I can then use that money for something else because that receipt covers that amount of money. And so, you know, that's just kind of a side note, but the reason I brought that up is because you do want to understand when you're younger that the money that you're going to spend more money on your health as you get older. And so the best thing you can do is try to figure out a way to save money in order to get to that point where you wouldn't have that burden, or at least the level of burden. And, you know, but again, it goes back to the heart, right? I keep coming back to this. It goes back to the heart, because if I'm doing it for comfort, like I just want to make sure I have plenty of money in my account so that I can pay for my medications, then, you know, if you're doing it because of that, or because of anxiety, because of worry, then you've crossed the line, and, you know, that's a problem. So yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with utilizing something like an HSA. Just make sure you watch your heart when you do that. Make sure you're doing it, you know, ask the Lord to check and make sure your motives are good, and that He would reveal when your motives are not good.
Okay, that makes sense. So we're all going to have health costs, but you want to have a little bit of a savings account. I would always say, growing up the way I did, for car trouble, you're always going to have, they talk about car trouble and medical issues. We take better care of our cars than we do our bodies, but it's good to have that, you know, dental, all this stuff, take care of yourself. I always put things off and say, look, I'll be fine. And then it ends up festering and getting worse, and I end up putting more money into it rather than going to the doctor when I should be.
Well, medical you are investing. That is an investment, because you're trying to make sure that you can stay as, you know, healthy as long as possible. Not because you're worshiping your body. Again, that's a hard issue. But you do, if you truly want to serve the Lord, then, you know, you do need to try to keep yourself healthy, and, you know, so that you can be strong to serve the Lord. Again, it's a hard issue because you don't want to do it because, you know, for the sake of health, you know, for the sake of looking a certain way or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So biblically, how do we look at our money? It's been an interesting conversation. I've learned a lot about money because I don't know a lot about money because I don't have a lot of money. So it's an interesting conversation. But the bottom line is, let's say we do make good money. Is it wrong to have about $150,000, $200,000 in the savings account?
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to give a number.
Or should we be using some of that for the Lord?
I think that if you give to the Lord and He gives you an abundance so that on top of that, you have the ability to save, as long as you are open-handed about that savings, that you are fine not to, you know, that it would be fine to have whatever you have. Nobody is, you know, but if it's just stacking coins, if it's just storing it up for the wrong, you know, with the wrong intention, then that's where it becomes problematic. And so I'm not going to give somebody a number, you know, oh yeah, if you have $100,000 in the bank, it's okay. Or 500,000 or whatever. Cause I don't think there is a number. He prospers people differently, and you know, your situation is different than my situation, and my situation is different than somebody else's situation. And so, you know, I don't think there's a number that way. But I would also, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people have a different idea of debt as well. I mean, we haven't talked about debt, but, you know, not all debt's bad debt. And, you know, and some people, I know some people who I know personally that would say they'll never go into debt. Like they'll just pay cash for everything. Yep. And they'll never go into debt. And I can respect that. I don't have a problem with that. You know, on the other hand, there's people who go into debt and they go into unwise debt, you know, debt that they can't deal with. And I think that's something that you have to be very, very careful of. Now, there is a middle ground. And this is where I'm at personally, but there is a middle ground where you can use debt in to your advantage, and you know, that you can, that not all debt's bad debt. And, And so, like, if I buy a house, it's not bad debt as long as I care for that house and as long as I buy wisely so that the investment doesn't go down. Obviously, the markets change and that can happen, but to the best of my ability, I buy a home that's gonna hold its value. It's the best of my ability when I buy a car. So it's very difficult to buy a car without, mm-hmm. Going into debt to some level. And, but if I go into debt for a car, I buy a car that's going to last and I take care of it. I don't just let it fall apart. I actually change the oil. I actually make sure I keep it washed and vacuumed and, all the things that I need to do that just to maintain it. I actually, replace things that need to be replaced instead of letting them go. Yeah, it's not bad if you do it that way and you pay it off and then you drive it. Say I buy a car, her Mazda that we have, and it's paid off. We paid it off early. We bought it, we paid it off early. And so that car we own, and her hope is to drive that car at least 10 years, but maybe even 14 or 15 years. That we'll just drive it as long as we can because we don't, it's not a matter of having a new car or something shiny and new. It's a matter of having something that's functional. Yeah. And so when you make that when you invest in that way, you want something that's going to be functional and you want something that's going to last.
Yeah, absolutely. There's good debt. Like you said, good debt and bad debt.
Sure.
Those are good debts.
Well, they can be. They can be bad too. I mean, if somebody's not, like if you're never satisfied with your car and you end up, selling your car every couple of years, and you end up getting upside down on your payment because of that, upside down on the loan because of that, that's unwise. But if you buy a car with the intent of caring for it and driving it multiple years beyond even paying it off, that's a wise investment and something that you should consider.
How about leasing a car? Is that a good idea?
Well, I think it can be. I don't know what, I'm not familiar with leasing cars. I just haven't done it. I know most people who do it would do it so that they can drive a newer vehicle because you lease a new vehicle and you can drive it for a couple of years, maybe three, depending on the terms of the lease. And then you turn it back in and you get, you're able to get another car.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because it's one, a way that car companies can sell cars but there's also, it also produces used cars because those same cars that are a couple of years old then go on a used lot and they're bought by people who want to buy used cars. So economically it makes sense that way. It's interesting because I think that it costs more, but what you're getting is the ability to drive a new car. I think it ultimately costs more than just purchasing one and driving one, for 10 years or whatever, whatever long you can do it. I think that's the best way. And by the way, I wouldn't say purchase new. I would say purchase, fairly new within, yeah. A year and a half of it, if you can, of, what the newest model is. And, because whoever drives it off the lot the first time is going to take the bulk of the depreciation, right off the top. And so, the car's probably going to lose 20% value as soon as you drive it off the lot. So, and nowadays cars are 50 grand. So, not all cars, but most of them are, 40 at least. And yeah, so 30. Let's just say it's $40,000 for a new car. You drive it off the lot and it loses 20%. It's worth 32,000 the moment as soon as you put it in gear. And that's just ludicrous. But if you buy one that's a little bit older than new and, where that initial depreciation is off of it, then that's better, and then drive it for a long time until it becomes a maintenance problem, major maintenance problem, so that's the best, probably the best model. But some people like leasing and I don't think it's the best financially, but I think it depends on what your goals are.
Yeah.
And one other thing is there's a max that you can drive with a lease. It's usually 12,000 a year or something like that.
Yeah,
which is actually fairly low mileage.
That's not much. All right. Well, money investing, money, how we handle our money. And hopefully this was informative. Any final word you want to leave us with on money and investing, retirement, life insurance, medical costs, all these things, tithing, giving? I don't like the word tithing, do you?
I don't think it's a New Testament word. I mean, I'm not saying it's wrong to use. I'm more lean toward giving as an offering. Yeah, offering, I guess you could say. But yeah, I mean, tithing's not necessarily wrong as long as you don't understand it as being a specific number.
Yeah.
Most people think a tithe, they think of 10%. Yeah, it's interesting because the Mormon church, they expect 10%.
Yep.
And what's interesting about that is, you know, if you look at giving, if you look at giving on average, I think it's like 3%. Like that's the average giving is 3%, which is dreadfully low. Yeah. And part of the reason why the Mormon church is so rich is because, you know, they're building, you know, they build these big massive temples and they build, you know, smaller churches and smaller communities. And the reason they're so rich is because they do expect their members to give 10%. And so they're able to do a lot of things to help with people and all that. And it's all, you know, doctrinally because they want to, you know, good works and, you know, that's, yeah. But it is interesting that, you know, but the average, you know, even I think probably even including if it's normally how they, or it's normally how they do it, but even including, you know, Mormons as Christians, the overall giving is 3%, which means that most churches are not getting that. They're not getting 3%. They're probably getting 1 or 2%.
Yeah, that's tiny.
Grace Bible Church has always been a church that gives. And, you know, we definitely have we've depended on the Lord and the Lord has used his people. And I don't want anybody to feel like that this whole conversation is some level of, there's some level of us trying to get people to give more money, because I don't want that. It's more, you need to give from the heart and you need to use your money from the heart and, you know, make sure that you're not a slave to it, but that you're a slave to the Lord.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. As we wrap this up, the bottom line is always comes back to the heart. It's always that. It's a heart issue and how we deal with money.
Yes.
Well, this has been insightful. I wish I had money that I could invest and do things with, but someday maybe the Lord will bless me with that, and that's fine. I'm ready to go. That's why you don't give me money, because I just have an Amazon.
Well, account. Actually, yeah, I have given you money.
You've been listening to Fresh Bread, a podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church Gainesville. For more information, go to gracegainesville.org. And thanks for listening.